So the philosophy here, and this is back from my investment days, the philosophy here is we pay exactly what we owe in taxes and not a penny more. So we're going to pay as much as we have to, but as little as necessary.
Hi, and welcome to the Creative Solutions Podcast, where we interview cutting-edge creative artists, entrepreneurs, and innovators who are changing the world. We also bring you tips and techniques that you can implement. This episode is brought to you by my favorite productivity hack, the Brain FM app, this podcast's hosts, Podbean, as well as my book, Speak From Within. Hey there, this is Isolde with a special announcement. I know that you're excited about this week's guest. I am too, but you need to hear this before we get into the episode. While Eric Henning teaches general principles of money and does individual business coaching, he cannot and does not provide investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult a professional licensed in your place of residence for specific tax, legal, or investment advice. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Creative Solutions Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. It is the second Monday of the month, which means it's Money Monday with the special guest, Eric Henning. Eric is a financial expert as well as a professional magician. And we're here the week before tax day to talk to you about things taxes. Before we get started, though, you need to know neither one of us is an accountant. Please, please, please check with your professionals before you do anything. But these are things that we're about to talk about because it is tax day coming up, that we have found to be some best practices, things that you need to be thinking about if you are any kind of a freelancer, performing artist, creative artist, or even business owner. So here we are, and let's get to it. Money Monday with Eric Henning. Hi, Eric. Welcome.
Well, hi there, Isolde. Glad to be back.
I'm so glad that you are back. This is one of those things that the topic that we're going to have today is something that used to fill me with fear. Now it fills me with trepidation. Sometimes it still makes me want to run screaming for the trees, but I've got a better handle on it than I used to. And that's because I've developed some systems that let me do it. But I want to talk to you about it. I want to get your expert opinion on this entire facet of being a business owner who's also a performing or creative artist. But before we get started with that, how are you? How are things going?
I'm doing okay. I'm getting over a bad chest cold. No big deal. But busy, busy, busy. Yeah, it's been great. We're Washington Magic is doing well. We're getting ready to do a special benefit performance for the Arts Club of Washington in June. And I'm pretty excited. Finishing up my second book, Son of Tips, which is the things that you don't learn from magic books and DVDs for children and family performers. I mean, it's basically the brain dump of everything I learned in 40 years of doing magic for families and children.
Wow. That I know that there will be a lot of people lining up to get that book. That is fantastic because those kinds of, I've lived there, I've done it, I've worked through it, I've figured out how to fix the things that went wrong, tips are crucial for people who are just coming up so they don't have to make some of the same mistakes we made as we were learning these things. You said 40 years. Talk to me about that. How much has what you do evolved and changed between started and today?
Okay, well, I've actually been doing magic professionally, part-time and full-time, for 52 years this past February. So about 10 years ago, I converted mostly over to corporate, adult, social, and charity events. That's what I mostly do now. I still do occasionally, like, for example, Saturday, I got a call from the town of Capitol Heights, Maryland, which is just outside Washington, D.C. Their magician that they booked for their Easter egg hunt had come down with COVID, and they needed a replacement at the last minute. I was available, so I was able to fill in and get my annual picture with the Easter bunny. Got a whole collection of those. So it's fun. You know, you still have those muscles, and you still exercise them, and it's still great. After the show, one of this little girl, adorable little girl, maybe 4 or 5 years old, came up to me, wanted to hug the platypus puppet and gave me some flowers she picked in the meadow there. So that was best review I've ever gotten.
That's terrific. So
we still do that. I still love kids. I still love working for, and a lot of what I do is mixed audiences. If it's like a wedding reception, there's going to be kids there. If it's a bar bat mitzvah, you know, and I'm doing the reception before the event, it's going to be a mixed bag. you know, if I'm doing, you know, we get older children. And when I do shows for teenagers, a lot of magicians are terrified of teenagers. When I do shows for teenagers, I do my adult show and I tell them that I'm doing my adult show. And it's great because I don't have any problems because they're like, oh, okay, he's showing us some respect. He's treating us like grown-ups would be able to behave that way. So it works out pretty well. But what I've done is I started out wanting to be like a David Copperfield, Doug Henning type. And so I had this great stage act and it was really finely tuned. I mean, when I was seven, and what the way I honed it was, there was a nursing home about 100 yards behind my house through the woods. And one of our ladies from church had gone to live there. And I went to visit her and I found out that nobody visits these nursing homes between Mother's Day and Thanksgiving. Nobody,
Really? Wow.
unless it's a birthday or something like that. And so when the manager found out that I did magic, he was like, oh, can you come and do a show for us, you know, next week or next month? And I said, I'll try to come up with something. So I came up with a show that I thought would work for people who had visual or auditory or cognitive impairments. And I worked on it and worked on it. And I did it. They loved it. They said, great, can you come back next week and do a show? And I said, well, I can't. It takes me longer than that to come up with a new show. And he said, who said new? Just come back and do the same show. Nobody cares. They're just happy to have you. And so I ended up doing the same show every week during the summers from when I was 14 to when I was about 16 for about 3 summers.
Wow.
And it got to the point where the when I was 17 and I got booked by Maryland National Capital Park and Planning to do their daycares around Prince George's County, Maryland. I had this show that was so tight that from the time my tires hit the parking lot to the time I was set up and ready to go with my record player and all my fancy stuff was 6 minutes. So yeah, so I worked that that was my 10,000 hours. That was, you know, that was what I did for quite a long time before anybody would pay me. And then, you know, Maryland Renaissance Festival and blah, blah, blah. So a lot of working for seniors is not terribly different from working for kids, except they do get the more sophisticated verbal jokes a little bit better. And I still do. I mean, I did a senior luncheon for a church in Baltimore just a couple of weeks ago. We had about 70 people, and I was up on a stage, and it worked great. So what's happened is I have what's evolved is really the scripting and the choice of material. I know what suits me better now, and I know how to present it my way. So you try to create your own signature. It's kind of like, you know, if you ever heard Mason Williams do Classical Gas, which he wrote, which was the most popular song in the world in 1968. A very famous guitarist, and I'm blanking on the name. I want to say Tommy Iommi, but I don't think that's who it is. Very famous rock guitarist did a version of Classical Gas that has gone viral on YouTube. And it's great, and it's completely different. It's like speed metal, but it's got its own charm and its own thing, and it's really great. And magic is like that. Music is like music like that. It's kind of like classical music. We have this repertoire of stuff that has survived for centuries because it transcends time and culture, and it's up to us to put our own personality on it.
I like that you said it
More
that way.
than you ever wanted to know. Sorry.
No, I think, I mean, it's so interesting because as you study your own craft with luck and hopefully you are amending it, you are finding out, like you said, I find out what suits me now. I find out and I refine and I refine and I refine. And I think refining what you're doing is a crucial and critical part of improving and making progress in your art and your craft, because if you keep doing what you've always done, you're going to keep getting the same result that you've always gotten, right? That's what I forget who it was who said that, but I think it's so true in so many parts of who we are and what we do. And there's also the notion that, and I've talked about this before, Elvis Costello famously complained that everybody always wanted to hear Allison when he went to perform live, and he's like, the song is 25 years old. I would really like to be able to sing some of my new stuff, but all people want to hear is my old stuff. And I thought to myself, wow, when I read that, I was like, wow, that's so fascinating, because I want to hear his new stuff, but then you have to start thinking, what has he been working on and how has he refined it? And is his creative muse the same stuff that I want to be listening to? And how is he going to hook me now versus with his old stuff that I love? So part of this for me, Eric, seems to be interaction with the audience when you're doing this stuff live, like when you were going,
right,
when you were a kid and you were doing these assisted living facility every week for every summer. There's a lot to be said for that. So talk to me a little bit about that. Like does your interaction with your audience inform how you evolve what you're doing?
One of the beautiful things about live entertainment is that every show is different. That's something you don't get from electronic media. And for a new generation that's grown up with tablets and iPhones and iPads and YouTube and everything, the only thing that can be better than electronic entertainment is live entertainment. That's why things like opera and NASCAR and Renaissance festivals have been exploding in popularity, because we are hardwired to interact with other people in the same room. Mm-hmm. No matter how great our technological advancements, you can't engineer out of genetics. Mm-hmm. If genetics were overwhelmingly important, more important than environment, you could teach calculus to a horse. So humans are social animals, and that's why during COVID lockdown, people were in such distress and why companies went back to live meetings so quickly. But you brought up a couple of things. What I would say to Elvis Costello, I'm being very presumptuous here because who is he to listen to me? What I would say to Elvis Costello is do what other great artists, and I've seen him in concert, by the way, and he's great. And he actually does what I'm about to say. If you watch any great concert performer, I don't care whether it's Jethro Tull or Dolly Parton or Loretta Lynn or Elvis Costello or Taylor Swift, they all do the same thing. They start with a high energy piece that everybody knows and loves. They do a couple of their lesser hits from the back catalog. Then they do two or three from the new album. That's where you put it. And then they go into a quiet, they power down, go into an acoustic set, and then they start the build up to the end. They end with the third or fourth most popular song. It's not what everybody came to hear. They're not quite satisfied. And then they say goodnight, everybody, and they walk off the stage, and people go crazy and stomp and cheer and clap until they come back. This is known as the fake encore. They come back, and now they do the number one and number two songs that everybody loves that they came here to see, and now everybody's happy. That structure is based on human psychology, and it works extremely well. So that's when you do the new material. You do it after you do a couple to let them know. But we get this in magic too. I mean, I had one client for 6.5 years, a corporate client that had me 2 to 4 times a month coming in to do magic in a private dining room for their VIP clients, you know, 30, 40 people in a private dining room. And I come in after dinner and do an hour of magic and mind reading. And there's a piece that I do where we have a shuffled deck of cards and somebody pulls out a clump of cards and I turn around, I can't see anything, I could be blindfolded, and I name every card they're holding. And it's very popular. And there were a few times when somebody who had already seen me would come back to one of these dinners. And if I didn't do that number, they'd come up to me and say, oh, I really was hoping you would do that. Mm. I was really looking forward to it. That's my favorite piece. When audiences tell you that, keep it in the show.
Sure.
I'm just tell you, I really like that. You know, there's a piece that I do that's the oldest trick in my show. It's at least 3,000 years old. It goes back to the ancient Babylonians. I have a pitcher of water that it's like a carafe. And I pour water out of it, but there's not much. And I take a drink. And then between routines, I keep pouring water out of this empty carafe. And I just don't comment on it, really. I just kind of, you know, do it. And the main reason I do it is because I need to take a drink. These restaurants and hotels are just suck the moisture right out of your body. But at the end of the show, without fail, always somebody, usually a man, one person will come up and they will, that was a great show. Where the hell did all that water come from? Because it was just bothering them the entire show, which is hilarious. So you never know. So I do gauge by audience response and what people tell me. And if somebody see me a little bit and they know kind of what I do and they tell me, yeah, this is really, really good. I like this one a lot better than some of these others. I kind of pay attention to that more than what magicians might say to me. But the other thing is, in terms of improving, if you're a performing artist, it's easier than ever. It's easier than it's ever been to perform, to improve your performance, because every one of us that has a smartphone is carrying around a high quality video camera. And so you get one of those little tabletop octopus tripods and you record every show that you do. And then you watch yourself. And then after the paramedics have revived you, you sit buckle down and get to work. The reason it's better than mirrors, and we've talked about this before, is because the video camera is completely impartial and dispassionate. It will show you and all of your flaws. And that's great. One of the things that happened during COVID with Washington Magic is we couldn't do live shows. So we each got our phones and put them on a stick and would record a 3 to 5 minute routine. And then our video wizard, Mike Noonan, would assemble them into a 45 minute show that we would do online for free. And that's how we built our email list. And we would solicit donations for the Arts Club, which was obviously closed during that period. And that the fact that you could videotape yourself, and then it was like being playing baseball and having an unlimited number of strikes. You could just swing the bat and you could just record as many times as you need to until you got it right. And so that meant we were watching ourselves on video over and over and over again, constantly. And it might take 10 or 12 takes to get the right one. And then maybe next month it only took 8, and the next month it only took 5. But we would get a real feel for how we need to do the lighting and the angles and everything, but mostly how to address the camera. And we all became video producers. If you were on Zoom, you became a video producer during that time period, and you got better at it. And so all of us, in Washington Magic, all of the team, we just all leveled up dramatically during that 2-year lockdown period because we were constantly performing for the camera and watching it.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I do the same thing. I record every show, every workshop, every time I work with a company, I'm recording. It's a lot of video release forms to get signed, but it's so important because it is very, very objective. It'll give you exactly what you need to see in order
whether
to
whether you like it or not.
Absolutely. And I don't mind that. I think, you know, for me, sometimes you win, sometimes you learn, and that's the point. So, all right. That's real. I appreciate you saying all of that because.
So this is the requisite 20 minutes of meandering before we get into the meat of the thing.
You know,
this is the problem, Isolde, is you and I, like, we like to talk about these ideas so much. They're just, I mean, we could just go off and do 20 episodes in one take.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny though, I don't think that this is meandering. I think reminding ourselves about these kinds of facets of being creative business owners is really important. This is something that that we need to be thinking about all the time. And yes, we do need to be thinking about our topic for the day and try to think about it daily if possible so that you can make it so that you are not tearing your hair out on April 14th like I used to do. But it is something for us to think about and to be aware of, but also to act on. And so let's get to it. I want to talk about, actually I don't, but we need to, let's talk about taxes. Eric, you have a lot of really specific ideas about taxes for the creative business owner and the freelancer. I would love to just start. You gave me an outline, which I love. And I would love to start with just the first sentence that you wrote down, pay as much as you owe and not a penny more.
Okay. So here's the philosophy. There are a lot of people who are like, I want to pay the least amount of taxes, and I'm going to really get as close to the line, or I'm going to cross the line to do it. I'm going to do some things that are a little bit hinky, might get me into trouble, probably won't get caught. IRS is underfunded. That's a philosophy that is guaranteed to give you some major trouble down the
and
road.
And ulcers. Ulcers. It will give you ulcers.
And there are people who say, just hand it to an accountant and let them do it and don't worry about it. And here's the problem with that. We're going to tell a story a little bit later about a very famous celebrity, very wealthy celebrity, who had that come back and bite him in the butt. But it's very important that you know what you're doing. So the philosophy here, and this is back from my investment days, the philosophy here is we pay exactly what we owe in taxes and not a penny more. So we're going to pay as much as we have to, but as little as necessary. Okay. So we don't want to overpay. We don't want to go crazy and try to do stuff that is going to get us into trouble. I'll tell the story now. Steve Harvey. Steve Harvey is a very famous performer and celebrity who does a million different things. He hosts Family Feud. He has his own talk show. He does radio. He has his own production company. And he owes. And a few years ago, he discovered that he owed the IRS $22 million.
Yikes.
He found that out because his accountant died. And they found a big box with piles of canceled checks in it, the checks that he had written to his accountant that the accountant was supposed to deposit and then pay the IRS out of. The accountant was taking that money for himself and living really well.
So he was cheating him.
The accountant stole $22 million in what was supposed to be tax payments from Steve Harvey. And now the IRS was going after him. And so now Steve Harvey pays the IRS $625,000 a month.
Wow.
In back taxes. Why? Because he didn't check on it. You must have checks and balances. So the reason I'm saying this is more money is not the answer. A lot of people say, well, the taxes wouldn't be so bad if I just, you know, had a lot of money. No, more money is not the answer. If you're not organized when you're making $10,000 a year or $100,000 a year, you're not going to be organized if you're making $10 million a year. It's just a bunch of extra zeros at the end. And not only does the money multiply, your problems multiply. So you got to get organized. And if you are in a position where you're not yet ready to go full time and you're not making that much, this is great for you because it means you have the time to get this put together, get your systems in place before you get into trouble. So one of the advantages of having a fledgling business that you're trying to get off the ground is you can put these systems into place now before it becomes an issue. But here's how our system works. And this is an unfortunate thing, but it's just reality, okay? We have to pay our taxes as business owners before we know how much we owe. And in fact, everybody does. Everybody, whether you're, if you get a salary and you have taxes withheld, you're paying basically an estimated tax. And then you don't really know what you owe until you file your tax return. And that's why so many people get refunds. Because the way it's set up is if you pay too much, you get a refund. If you pay too little, you get into trouble and you pay, start paying fines and penalties. So everybody pays too much and then they get that money back. And what's happened is you've just given the federal government a tax-free loan for a year or an interest-free loan for a year. So yeehaw. So the systems are complicated, but the good news is it's easier than it's ever been to navigate. It is easier than it has ever been to navigate your taxes. Partly because, we believe it or not, the tax code has been simplified since the 1950s and 60s when the top corporate tax rate was 95% or 90%. So it's a much easier thing now than it was to do. And the reason is because of technology. And we're going to talk about that a little later. Now, this is a very complicated topic and it can easily become overwhelming. So what I'm going to try to do is give you the overview, give you the survey, give you the bird's eye view, so that you can then have something to hang your hat on, have some kind of a structure that you want, where you understand kind of where this is going. So I'm going to give you three P's. I'm not a Baptist preacher and I don't play one on TV, but I find that this is useful for people. So the three P's in order are: you pay, you plan, and you prepare. What? Yes, we pay first. You have to pay your taxes before you actually plan your tax strategy and before you prepare your tax return for that year. In fact, a long time before.
Boy.
That's the way our systems work. Okay, so if you are in a salary job or an hourly job, you don't really think about this because taxes are taken out before you get your paycheck. So what you're getting is an after-tax paycheck. But if you look at that paycheck, or if you remember those paychecks, and if you can do that without, you know, PTSD, then what you do is you look at the withholding and you'll see three things. You'll see federal taxes, state taxes, and FICA. Okay. Federal taxes, that's your income tax, but that's not the only tax you pay. Secondly, you have state income tax. Now, I live in Laurel, Maryland, so I have the privilege of paying city income tax, county income tax, state income tax, and federal income tax. Yeehaw. But the good news is our streets get plowed instantly when it snows. So that's fine. So all of these taxes come out automatically. And then FICA is your Social Security and Medicare. Social Security and Medicare. Now, if you're an employee, if you're a W-2 employee, your employer pays half of that. Okay? That amount is basically 15.3% of your income. You only pay 7.65, or half of that, When you're an employee, your employer pays the other half of your Social Security. When you're self-employed, you pay all of it. So that's called your self-employment tax. That's separate from your income tax. It pays for Social Security and Medicare. All right. And you can't, there are only a couple of ways to opt out of Social Security, and we'll talk about that. We'll do a whole thing on Social Security and retirement down the road. Don't worry about that. I'm just going to assume that you're in Social Security. So you need to do that, and you need to account for that. So it's not just income tax, but it's also that 15.3% self-employment tax that you're going to have to pay. So that's just park that. So you're going to pay that. And the way you're going to do that is you're going to pay it quarterly. What you're going to do is you're going to calculate, you're going to look at how much you paid in taxes last year. You're going to divide that by four, and you're going to pay that amount one quarter each quarter. Now, if you're with some of these tax services or you have an accountant, they're going to send you these IRS forms, these coupons that tell you the exact dollar amount you're supposed to pay and when to pay it. And so you need to make sure that you save up enough money out of your revenue from your business to pay those taxes. Usually that works out to be about 30% or so. Some people set aside 50%. It's entirely up to you. But you, if you've been in business for a while and you've been making a profit and you've been filing your taxes, then you're going to have a number. You're going to have that number already. You know what it is. So it's really important you save up that money to pay your quarterly taxes. And you're going to pay those quarterly taxes in, you know, at the end of each quarter. And then at the end of the year, you will have paid your total estimated tax for the year. And then you file your tax return and you get back whatever, because your income is adjusted based on how much money you made, based on the tax deductions that you can take out, what counts against your income, what reduces your taxable income. That's what a deduction does. We'll talk about that in a minute and some of the categories, because that's where you're going to make the money back. But you got to pay first. So I would encourage you to set aside at least 30% to pay those taxes if you don't know what they are, or calculate the dollars you need, and you know that'll tell you how much you need. You need to pay $2,000 a month or $1,000 a month. And you need to pay this tax, by the way, if you make more than $1,000 a year at your business. If you make more than $1,000 a year at your business, you got to, even if it's a side hustle, you still got to pay that. And if you're full-time employed and your business is a side hustle or a part-time gig, then you still need to, you need to file this. And we talked about setting yourself up with a business bank account and setting yourself up as an LLC that gets taxed as a sole proprietorship. And, you know, all of that, you can do that. And then you file a Schedule C, which is a corporate tax return. That's a corporate tax form. And that's how you handle your self-employment income separate from any, you know, job or salary position you might be having in your, you know, Monday through Friday life. I'm going to pause, take a sip of water, and let you regroup.
Yikes. Okay. So there's a lot here that is stuff that you can be thinking about. And I'm going to just ping on something that Eric said while he's taking his drink of water. And that is, when do you pay and how do you set aside the money? So you can, and this is something I do, I have a special little interest-bearing savings account that whenever I get paid for any sort of a gig, part of that money from that gig goes right into that small interest-bearing savings account. I don't touch that money except for April 15th, June 15th, September 15th, and January 15th. It's not exactly quarterly. That's when I pay my estimated taxes, and that money comes right out of that little savings account. Now, is it easy to remember to do that? No. I have systems set aside on my Asana, which is my project management tool, and also on my calendar to remind me of this stuff. So I'm not going, what was I supposed to do when and how much am I going to? I don't want to have to remember anything anymore except for maybe the lyrics to songs or how to make my favorite pizza. That's the kind of stuff I want to remember. The stuff
right.
That is, this is part of my business. I want it to be A, automated if possible, and B, easy to get back to. There needs to be a system in place that helps me do this stuff without making myself crazy. Eric, are you back?
Yeah, I'm telling you, listen, the smartphones are the godsend for the ADHD crowd and creatives, because we can set alarms, we can set reminders, we can have these apps like Asana that help you organize things. And if you think of your taxes as another project, let's say you have your, let's say you paint watercolors and you have a gallery opening, you're going to have a whole track of everything you need to do to get ready for that gallery opening, right? Or like a gallery show is what I meant. Okay.
Exhibition.
An exhibition. Thank you. Well, your taxes, think of your taxes as another gig. Think of your taxes as another gig that you do. Like it's a show that I do, or it's a regular show that you do four times a year on April 15th, June 15th, September 15th, and January 15th of the following year. You know, that's when we pay our quarterly taxes. That's when we need to get them into the IRS. And I would honestly do it electronically because the U.S. Postal Service has been crippled over the last few years for a variety of reasons that I won't get into. And you cannot, I mean, you're not liable if it's postmarked in time, but who needs that headache?
Yeah, and the IRS has made
makes
it pretty
it so easy.
Yeah,
they make it very easy to pay them money. And by the way, the IRS.gov website is one of the most user-friendly, helpful websites there is. Don't be afraid. Nobody's going to be tracking you. They're not going to, you know, stormtroopers are not going to knock down your door. But they have all of that, and you can always call somebody who's really smart about these things to help explain it to you if you still don't get it. But they really place a priority on explaining this stuff in plain English and giving you the forms you need. It's super, super, super easy to do that kind of stuff. And you can download all the forms and then fill them out. A lot of them are fillable PDFs, right? They're forms that you can just have on your computer and then type in everything and then print it out. And it looks beautiful and it's done. It's so nice. So it doesn't have to be super, super challenging or difficult.
Absolutely.
What you're going to be doing.
And the states,
but you do have to pay quarterly.
Yes. And the states too. There are times there. You have to remember that if you live in a state that has
income tax,
you're going to have to do the same thing. In New York makes it super easy. They have a little form you can fill out. Right on the website that, you know, this is what I made, this is what this is what that, and then it tells you how much you have to pay, and then you can just pay it.
but you download the forms and you mail it in or you do it electronically. The other thing is a lot of the state tax systems are designed to key off of what your federal tax is. So if you pay this much in federal tax, it'll give you a number and say, okay, 10% of that is now going to be state tax or whatever percentage. They'll calculate it based on your state tax. And if you're with a company that does like TaxSlayer or TurboTax or any of those online companies, you can absolutely, it'll do all of that. You just type in your numbers and it'll do all the math for you and it'll enable you to pay that electronically through the website. Very, very easy. Or it'll help you print out the forms if you want to write a check. What's a check? Don't do the checks. Don't do checks. Bad idea.
I don't think I have checks anymore, which is that's interesting.
Yeah, it's crazy. Did I tell you the story I think I told the story about former owner of the Dallas Mavericks, Mark Cuban.
Yes, you did.
One of his employees, yeah. So we don't use checks. Okay, so that's the pay. So we got to set up and pay, and there are a lot of tools to enable us to do that. And again, if you have your previous year's taxes, then you just go off of that. It's pretty easy. Okay, secondly, plan. Now this is where we get into the meat of how we're going to get that money back. And we're going to plan our spending based on what we can deduct. In other words, my strategy, the simplest strategy is you've got a separate business bank account, hopefully by this time. All of your revenue goes into that account and you might pay yourself a dividend or some income out of that, but all of your expenses are going to come out of that bank account, that business bank account. The business is paying its own expenses. This is really important. Ideally, it's a one-way street. Ideally, the business revenue goes in there, you pay your expenses and you pay yourself out of the business account. You're not taking money out of your personal account to fund the business. Now, that may not be where you start out. A lot of us start out funding the business out of our own pocket, and that's fine.
Sure.
That's okay. Those expenses are still tax deductible. They're still tax deductible. So, for example, I just pay everything related to the business out of the business bank account. If I'm putting gas in my car to go to a gig, it comes out of the business account. If I'm eating a meal on the road, it comes out of the business account. If I'm meeting with a client, it comes out. Any expenses related to that come out of the business account. Car repairs, dry cleaning for my costumes, repairs of costumes, purchasing of costumes, purchasing of things like microphones, sound systems, tables, magic equipment, anything that's going to be a capital expense, a computer. These are all tax deductible when you use them for your business. And I have these things that are dedicated exclusively for my business. Consumables. There are things, there are production items, there are throw streamers and things that are consumables that might need to get replaced because as I use them, you know, if you're cutting and restoring a lot of rope, sounds counterintuitive, but yeah, you're going to need to replace some rope after a while.
Absolutely. And so, the same goes for whatever kind of creative or performing artist you are. If, for example, for me, if I buy a new guitar that's going to be used on
strings.
Stage, strings, sheet music.
So this is good. So this is a good example of this. The guitar is a capital expense. It's an investment and you can write it off the same year you buy it, 100%. The strings are a recurring expense. They're just kind of a maintenance thing, right? Because you need to buy new strings periodically.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing. And sheet music is would be considered like books or educational materials, which are tax deductible. So when I buy magic books, mm-hmm. you know, that's tax deductible.
Absolutely. And there's so much, you know, for example, if you're doing something like TurboTax, one of the things that it does is when it asks you about your business expenses, it gives you a list. This is the kind of stuff that you might be able to expense. And then it says more things you might be able to expense. And it gives you a whole list. So if you're not sure, yes, of course, check with your accountant. I said that before, I'll say it again. But if you're using one of those electronic filing apps, something like TurboTax or one of the others, you can look and see if the kind of thing that you are using for your business is listed and what category you're going to need to put it in. And I know that they used to have now there's an office supplies and there used to be an office equipment for this year. There is not an office equipment. It changes every year. So you want to stay on top of this stuff, even if you don't know it fully, like Eric knows it fully and I do not, but you do want to start looking at what kind of expenses is this going to be so that when you're tracking your business purchases throughout the year, you're able to give yourself a leg up and categorize and tag whatever it is you bought for your business so that when it comes to tax time, it's easier to figure out where things need to go. Eric, keep on going.
Right, exactly. And so that's really, really important. You can, for example, just there, again, there are different categories of tax deductions that you get for small businesses, and you can look up. There's a quick web search will give you that information. Indeed.com has a great page about top 16 tax deduction. For example, you can deduct. I'm just going to go through this really quickly, but you can look this up on your own. Startup costs, like for example, advertisements for a grand opening, costs of training employees, or paying instructors for training. Fees for conducting studies to explore market conditions, labor supply and competitors, money paid to consultants or attorneys and accountants, travel expenses related to establishing relationships with suppliers. There's insurance you can write off, your business auto insurance, your business continuation insurance, your health insurance, your property insurance, liability insurance, life insurance used for succession planning. That's an exception. You got to be careful there. Malpractice insurance if you're in an area that requires it. Utilities, anything that's exclusively used for your business, if you have a telephone line or a cell phone that's just for your business, you can write all of that off. Cable TV that's just for your business, you know, anything, internet, landline telephone service, anything that's used exclusively for your business, you can do that. That really applies mostly to companies that have a physical store or a location or a warehouse. But those are tax deductible. Now, people know about the home office deduction. That's basically if you own a home, it's only if you own a home, and you can deduct the cost, the percentage of your annual home costs related to the square footage of that piece of your house but you must use that exclusively for business. Exclusively for business. Okay? So if you have a party in your office, that blows it. Unless it's a party for your business.
I was going to
So
say, there are businesses that have holiday parties. That is still part of your business.
that's still part of your business. That's right. But the point is, if it's an office in your home, if it's that part of the room, you can deduct your mortgage interest and your home insurance and whatever percentage that is. But I would really work with an accountant on that one to make sure you get it right, because that is one of the things the IRS looks at for audits is the home office deduction. That is going to get flagged, and it will make you more likely to get an audit. And sometimes by the time you're done calculating all that, a lot of times it's really not worth it. So just be careful on that. Inventory. If you have to have inventory, if you are making pottery, and you have to have a place to store it, or if you're selling books and you need a place to store your books, the inventory that you're carrying, the stuff you bought, that is tax deductible. You can, the things that can, is the cost of goods. So the cost of manufacturing those things, it might be running a factory or freight costs or labor costs, storage, anything like that. If you rent business space, that rental and payments, those are tax deductible. Your automobile expenses related to the business. Now, this is kind of cool because the biggest problem is in the old days, what you'd have to do is keep a diary in your car, keep a notebook like a Moleskine or something, and you would write down the mileage at the start of your trip when you're driving for business and the mileage at the end. Actually, there's an app, there's some apps for that now. And if you have an Android or an iPhone, there's an app called Mile IQ, which is not a sponsor. It's just one I've used and it's very good. It's called Mile IQ. And basically, it runs in the background. And when your phone connects to your car, like your car radio or whatever connects to the Bluetooth in your car, it automatically knows you're in the car. And it'll ask you, a little screen pop up will come up, is this a business trip or a personal trip? And it'll calculate your mileage for every time you're in the car, and it has a GPS, so it knows when you're stopping, when you're starting, and it calculates your mileage. And then at the end of the year, it'll give you a report that you can use for your taxes on how many miles you drove for your business. That's just mileage. And remember, that's deductible based on a federal government formula per mile. The mileage is deductible. That's not including, additionally is going to be gas that you put in the car for those trips. And maintenance, and the percentage of, the maintenance for the car that applies to the amount you're using it for your business. So you can deduct, so you just need to keep records, but these apps make it easy, easy, easy to do that automatically without having to think about it.
Which
Charitable
I
donations.
love.
Yes. Charitable donations. Well, you're in Manhattan. You're a car for you is like luggage.
But that's the thing, though. I travel to gigs and to Western Pennsylvania or to
That's true. When
Massachusetts
you're
or wherever.
driving those long commutes, when you're
Yeah,
coming down to National Harbor all the way down to DC,
exactly.
that's
Those
important
that's
too.
all of the tolls are deductible because it's for business. All of the
Right.
mileage, all of that stuff is
Also,
deductible.
subway and mass transit that you use to get to a gig, and Uber and Lyft. If you use an Uber to get to a gig, that's tax deductible. Okay, to and from a gig.
Yeah, transportation like that, and it's really lovely. And you can get those records, right? Lyft keeps
Yes.
records of how far you've gone or how much it cost. You can get all of that stuff. And I'm
Yep.
going to add another thing. It's jumping slightly off topic, but still on topic. If you sell, like Eric was talking about having inventory, if you're selling goods and you're selling them and you're making money with Square, with PayPal, with Venmo, with whatever, they can give you reports on exactly what you sold, exactly what their fees were per transaction. Every year at the end of the year, you can get all that information so that you have all of it with you when you sit down to do your taxes. All right, keep on going. Charitable
Right.
donations.
And you can decide if you want to just count the net income after fees, after those PayPal fees, or if you want to count the gross, amount. Like if you sell a book for $25 and you get like $23.50 after the fees, you can claim the $23.50 as income, or you can claim the $25 and then deduct the credit card fees. You can do it either way. Charitable donations, monetary gifts, and merchandise given by your business to a tax-exempt charity. Now, not every tax-exempt organization is a charity that will allow you to deduct the contribution. For example, my Masonic Lodge is not a 501c3. It's a 501c something else because it's not a charity, but it is a nonprofit. My Magic Club, IBM Ring 50, the National Capital Ring, is a 501c6, which is a business league. We're there to promote the art of magic and to improve ourselves as magicians. It's not a tax deductible. You know, payments to that are not tax deductible, but a charity, 501c3, like the Shriners Hospitals or whatever, you donate money and you donate physical goods. Like if you donate clothes to a charity, though, or a church or whatever, those are all tax deductible. Now, here's where we get into something, and you're going to get phone calls, especially if you're a performer, from charities that are looking for contributions. And they'll say, oh, you can come and do a show, Isolde. It's tax deductible. You can deduct it on your taxes. No, you can't. No, you can't. Gifts of services are not tax deductible. Let me repeat that for the people in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Gifts of services are not tax deductible. Again, check with an accountant who's licensed in your state of residence to make sure I'm telling you the truth before you make any decisions on your own finances. But I'm very serious about this. They're not tax deductible. So, but the thing is, you're going to get a call from an 18-year-old intern who doesn't know, and they're just reading off a script, and that's fine. And we've talked a little bit about how to deal with that in previous episodes. What I will tell you is that that those are not tax deductible. What some charities will say is, well, we'll pay you a check for your fee, and then you just turn around and write the same amount to us, and now that's tax deductible. That's great, but you're still losing money. Why? Remember that 15.3% self-employment tax? You still have to pay that on the money they paid you, no matter what you pay them in return. So you're not going to get all of that money back as a tax deduction. You're only going to get 84.7% on the dollar back. So you're still losing money on that deal. Okay. So that's not, and it's a lot of paperwork for not much. So I would not be doing that. If you want to donate your services, just donate. Don't worry about the tax deduction. Do it because it's the right thing to do. I try to do at least one free public charity show a month, just because, you know, it's kind of a big thank you to the community for allowing me to do what I love for a living. Next category, office supplies and furniture. Again, this is things like calendars, planners, chairs, desks and tables, file folders, filing cabinets. File folders are a consumable. People buy them multiple times a year. Or if you need a new calendar every year, ink and toner for your printer, the printer only once when you buy it, but the ink and toner, you can, you know, as you replace it, that's deductible. Light bulbs, notebooks, packing supplies, paper, pens and pencils, tape, glue, any of that stuff. You wouldn't believe the shopping list that magicians have when they go into an office supply store, Isolde. It's crazy.
Hmm.
It's like, I'm going to get bubble gum, string, repositionable adhesive, a bag of Hershey Kisses, and a computer. You know, I mean, it's just weird. You know, the shopping lists are hilarious. But all that stuff is tax deductible. Software. If you're buying software, if you buy Intuit for small business, that's deductible. You know, your subscription to any of these apps or services that we talk about all the time, those are all tax deductible. And you do it on an annual basis, a monthly subscription, pay it for the year, save yourself some money, and then, you know, just gives you one number to worry about instead of 12. Business meals. Some of the cost, not all of it, but a part of the cost of business meals may be tax deductible if you're buying it from a restaurant. So you need to keep receipts. You know, if you pay for it with your PayPal business debit card or your Square business debit card, you're going to automatically have that recorded there. But keep receipts. That's a big, big deal. So you can track all this stuff. Travel expenses. We talked about that. Automobile expenses, airfare, bus, rail, subway. Dry cleaning is considered a travel expense. I have no idea why. Hotels, meals, parking and valet service, rental car fees, taxes, ride sharing, tips, tolls. Yes, tips. Tips are tax deductible. Interest and bank fees. If you pay a bank fee or you pay interest on something like that, like a business credit card interest, you might qualify. That's something your accountant can tell you about. Professional services. If you hire independent contractors to work for you, Isolde, their salaries, they're not salaries, but the money you pay them on their 1099s, you might be able to deduct that money from your revenues.
You totally can. And something to remember, and I'm going to break in here. I've had contractors that I've hired for who did not make a $600 for the year go, oh, great. That's no. That money is still counted. That's still tax. That's still tax. That money that you pay them if they
Right.
make
They
$250 with you this year, they still have to do that for their taxes, which isn't your business. That's on them. But
Right.
you can still and should still put that into your taxes, even if you did not have to generate a 1099 for them or submit one to the IRS.
Exactly. So you would do a 1099 NEC form as the employer or the contractor in this case, the person that's hiring. And that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And they still have to pay. Yeah. Even if you don't, if it's a small amount of money, you still have to pay you still have to declare it for your income taxes. And the IRS has ways of finding this stuff out. Don't ask me how I know.
And
Okay.
it's just the right thing to do too. I mean, you made the money
Yes.
and and I had one contractor once went, woohoo, it's tax-free. No. I'm still
No.
going to be putting into my paperwork that I
It
paid
is.
you $300 this year. It behooves you to do the same thing and
And
mark it that you've made
in
that
fact,
money.
those small amounts are actually rather tricky because when you get more than $600 for something, you get that 1099 in the mail, usually in February, and then it's in front of you and you remember to put it in. With the smaller amounts, you have to really pay attention to keep track of that,
Yeah.
especially because they do add up.
Sure, sure, sure.
But also, if you're paying a CPA or an attorney or any of those professional services, and again, there are specialty things. For example, if you're a professional athlete and you're paying and you have a personal trainer or a chiropractor or an orthopedic doctor, guess what? Anything that health insurance is not paying for, that's tax deductible. Salaries are paid to employees who are not partners in your business. That's probably not going to apply to most of us. If you have W-2 employees, that's a trigger for you to use an accountant. I'm just going to say it flat out. If you have W-2 employees and you're paying salaries, you should have a professional CPA or an enrolled agent working with you on your taxes. Just
And
flat out.
something to bear in mind if you're listening in California, from what I understand from talking to an accountant, to a CPA, California's laws have changed recently. And you need to talk to an accountant and see because now, apparently, it's even hard to like be a TaskRabbit person in California because
Right.
any pay for any fee for work situation. It's becoming a W-2 situation. In other words,
Right. They're
taxes
trying to get
FICA not.
rid of gig
Right.
work as a
Right.
category in California.
Yeah.
That now that doesn't affect your federal taxes. That's California. That's for state taxes. But it's really worrisome because the federal government doesn't like having a patchwork of regulations all over the country for things like this. So this could have a real influence on, and the problem is that, in my opinion, and again, this has nothing to do with financial advice of any kind, but in my opinion, getting rid of gig work is going to make it harder for people to start businesses. And business startups are what drive the economy, what drive employment. And one of the things that's been great about gig work, particularly in the internet age, is that we've had this massive, massive increase in the number of businesses started by women and minorities. It's been remarkable.
Yeah.
And the number of women and minority-owned businesses in America has just exploded. And without the ability to be a 10 to get 1099s, I don't think you would have seen that at all. Okay,
No,
so
for sure.
education, any kind of education, if you have, especially if you have to travel, but if you have an educational thing, there's some businesses where you have to get recertified or there's continuing education requirements. All of those expenses are tax deductible. Anything that's not reimbursed is tax deductible. Advertising and marketing expenses. This is going to be a big one for a lot of us. It'll be things like domain name fees, web hosting fees, web design fees, billboards, posters, business cards, direct mail, email services that charge you a fee, event sponsorship and attendance fees, influencer marketing, market research, print ads, paying a firm to help you market or advertise, or PR firm, printing costs for printed materials, promotional merchandise like branded clothing or office supplies or drinkware, radio ads, search engine ads, social media ads, television ads, any of that. That's all tax deductible for your business. So pay those things. So basically, the rule of thumb here is pay all of those expenses out of your business account. And then when you get through calculating everything, whether it's you or it's you with a website or it's you and a professional, a good percentage of those will turn out to be tax deductible. Some won't, not all, but some, but a lot of it will. And the more you take, honestly, probably the two that most people forget to deduct are their advertising costs and like web costs and stuff, and mileage. Those are the two things that I think most small businesses forget to deduct, and they don't even keep track of it. And that's a huge amount of money that you can get back on your taxes. And who wouldn't want to do that?
Heck yeah. Remember the sort of overriding concept that Eric was talking about at the beginning of this episode? Pay everything you owe and not a penny more. And this is one of the ways to make sure that you are getting all of the pennies paid in the right place and not paying a single, make it legal, of course, be legal, all of that. But you want to pay only what you owe and don't pay anything else. Don't pay any more than you absolutely have to.
So the way we would go on that, so just to simplify it a little bit, is number one, pay all of your business expenses out of the business account. Okay, don't pay your family groceries out of the business account. Pay your business expenses out of the business account. Number two, keep receipts. Keep track of all those expenses. If you're using a bank card for that instead of cash, that's great. Then what you want to do is, you can export those bank statements into a spreadsheet format and send them off to Turbo, QuickBooks, and it'll ask you, and it'll do it by vendor. Is this a business expense or not? And then when it sees, so for example, if you fill up your gas tank at, say, the Shell station, and it'll ask you, is this a business expense? Yes, it's gas. It's travel expense, or it's considered travel. It's the Shell. The next time it sees that Shell station with that address, it'll automatically just put it down as a business expense because you've already told it what to do. So you want to pay things out of your business account, keep receipts. And the third thing is plan the timing of when you buy major purchases. So if you're planning to buy a new computer, or you need a new desk, or something that's going to cost a little bit of money, do it before the end of the calendar year, and it'll be deductible on that year's taxes. Don't wait till January. Do it in November, December. And a lot of vendors, particularly business-oriented vendors, understand that, and they will have generally very big sales on things at the end of the year.
And it's not just because the holidays and gift giving. It's also because of business.
Now, here I'm going to give you one other thing, and this is very specialized. If you're in a business, let's say you own a flower shop and you have a van that delivers flowers and it's only used for your business. You have a vehicle. Talk to your accountant or your tax professional about leasing that vehicle instead of buying it. Here's why. If you buy the vehicle, you can't necessarily deduct all of the payments and expenses and everything associated with that. But if you lease it, generally you can. You can lease the entire cost of the vehicle, your lease payments, all of it. And that could be very advantageous. But again, it depends. It depends on how your business is set up. It depends on if you have a vehicle that's just for the business. And it depends on what your tax professional tells you. That's something. So you're going to pay first, you're going to get set up on your quarterlies, and you're going to plan your deductions and your expenses to maximize the amount of money you're going to get back. And then the final part is to prepare. This is the part where you prepare your tax returns. And this is the part that people find very painful because it frequently uses a part of our brain that, if I wanted to do math and wear a suit, I would have become an accountant. And I have a certain amount of experience in this because, my degree is in theater, but I spent half of my business life full time in the investment business, and I had to learn how to do paperwork, and I had to be very precise and detail oriented about things that involve math. And I was the guy that actually used algebra when I got out of school. I actually used calculus on a daily basis. So it's, So I know what it's like to be a creative person who has to adapt to doing left brain calculating kinds of things. The good news is you can do it. And it's easier than ever because we've got all this technology to take the drudgery off of your hands. You put in the data, and as long as you keep track of it during the year And it's not too late for this next year. You can go back and you can go through for this year's taxes. If you haven't kept track of things, it's going to be painful. You have to go back and look at stuff. And like cash expenses, like tips, obviously get a receipt or write it down in your little notebook or on your phone and some in a document that you keep on your phone. Keep track of those cash expenses. That's the stuff that gets away from you. But once you've filed this year's taxes, you want to go back to January 1st of this year, 2024, and make sure you go back and start cataloging everything. Get an accounting program of some kind that can interface with a tax preparation program. And just do it. Just start keeping track. If you haven't been keeping track of your mileage, that's okay. You can also estimate and go back over your gigs and go back and do the Google Map thing from your door to their door. And you can, that'll give you a mileage based on your actual route, right? So not as the turtle flies, but you know, as your actual route. And so you can estimate your mileage as well. That's valid. But start, install one of these apps that calculate your mileage today, if you can, and start getting it actually precisely. So get caught up from January 1st, and that process will get your systems in place. And then, even though it's painful, it's completely worth it, because once those systems are in place, then your life becomes so much easier and you can spend less than an hour a week on this. Maybe it could be as little as 3 or 4 hours a month to get this done. And again, it's just a chore. It's like doing the laundry. Okay? It's like doing the laundry. It's 2 hours, but it's 2 hours, 5 minutes at a time.
You know, right? What's beautiful about that actually is I use what used to be called personal capital. Now it's called Empower. And I've gotten to the point now where it took a little bit to set up, which, you know, I set it up according to all of the different expenses categories that you are going to see when, if let's say you're doing TurboTax, which is what I use, not an affiliate, just what I happen to use. But the point is that when I have an expense that I know is going to be a deductible expense, I go in every Sunday morning at 8:30. That is my thing, from 8:30 to about 8:45. I reconcile my expenses. And that's literally how long it takes, is about 15 minutes a week, because I have everything connected. It all shows up. My business credit card is there. Everything is exactly where I need it to be. I can tag things the way I need to. I can categorize them the way I need to. And at the end of the year, I can get through and I can see basically drop it down to a CSV file and see everything. I can see my expenses. I can see my revenue. I can see my trends. I can see all of it. And of course, it's then super easy to enter all of that data in. I haven't figured out how to automate yet, but the point is that it's now a lot easier to enter the data into TurboTax for me because it's already been categorized. And that becomes right. A simple thing to do.
Yeah. And you can hire somebody. You can hire a teenager to do that for you if you really can't handle the data entry part. So yeah, absolutely. It's the best thing to do. So when you're planning, you're preparing rather, automate as much as you can. The setup is painful, but it's worth it. Use professionals if you need to, that's fine. Now, if you're using a software, the professional will love you. If you're getting all this stuff done with the software, it means that they have less work to do, which means your fees will be a lot lower and they will love you for it. You'll be their favorite client. But you can also, because you're not using them to do the grunt math, ideally, you're using them to give you the advice, the strategies and tactics you're going to need to make sure that you're paying what you owe, but not a penny more. You still need to check their work and make sure it's correct. I remember when I had finally made partner at my investment firm, I got to a point where it was really more complicated. I was getting quarterly bonuses and things. It was really hard for me to do my taxes, or I just didn't have time, honestly. I was going crazy. I had 5 appointments, 6 appointments a day with clients, and I was just out of my gourd with work. So one of our clients was a CPA, really nice guy, who I will not name now for reasons that will become obvious in a minute. Really good accountant. And I had him prepare my taxes, and it cost me $475, and which was fine because it saved me thousands of dollars in man hours. I could take that time that I would have used to prepare the taxes and earn a lot more money. So it paid for itself literally 100 times over without any trouble at all. Then I get a letter from the IRS. This is the first year I'm doing getting having an accountant do my taxes. Get a letter from the IRS. And they say, you've overpaid your taxes. Here's a check for $445. And I went to the accountant. I said, wait a minute. I paid you $475 and you calculated my taxes wrong and I overpaid by this amount. Fortunately, the IRS caught it. I didn't get it, Jit. The IRS caught it. So explain to me again why I'm paying you money to get my taxes wrong. And he was very chagrined, waived the fee for the following year. But after that, I generally have not been using it. I've been using the software because I got it now. I kind of know how to do it. And the software makes things so much easier. And to be quite honest, the accountants are happy because they would like, if you're not making a bazillion dollars a year and don't have really complicated taxes, they would rather that you used the software and then they can help, they can double check your work, sign off on it, and you can make sure that you're doing everything the way it's supposed to be done. It's just a really good double check. And that doesn't cost a lot of money. It doesn't. Double checking your tax return that you've already prepared does not cost a lot of money as compared to giving them envelopes full of receipts and having them do everything from scratch. So that's, they would rather have less work to do
sure.
for a lower income client who's not going to be paying that big a fee to begin with. They would rather spend their time on the big, you know, fancy stuff where people are dealing with multiple corporate entities and interlocking boards of directors and all that stuff, where it's that's where their expertise really shines the most. That's where they make their most money. So I think, you know, we want to get to the point where you're doing your own taxes and the accountants and the tax professionals or an enrolled agent. You don't have to have a CPA. You can have an accountant who's not a CPA do your taxes. The CPA is only required for a company that is publicly traded. A lot of people don't know this. A publicly traded company is the only company that's required to have a CPA audit their taxes and audit their books. That's why it's a certified public accountant. And so a CPA will cost more than a regular accountant that's not a CPA. And they will cost more than an enrolled agent or an EA. An enrolled agent is a person who is qualified to practice before the IRS. In other words, they can do your taxes. They can give you tax advice. And if you've got it audited, they will go with you to the audit. Or better yet, they will go to the audit. It's better if you never go to the audit. Send your accountant or your tax attorney or your EA and enrolled agent to the audit without you. Don't ask me how I know.
I love that.
So, well, so that's it. So you need to check their work because you don't want to be Steve Harvey and owe $22 million in taxes because your accountant ripped you off. And you don't want to be paying an accountant to get your taxes wrong.
You know, what's interesting about all of that is that it's so much of this ends up being sort of personal responsibility and also personal courage, right? So I'm hearing you talk and I'm kind of going, yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely, yes, yes, absolutely. And the thing is that we're not taught this, right? In school, we're not being taught how to manage our taxes, how to even balance our checkbooks, for Pete's sake,
you
right?
Know, a lot of school systems are doing financial literacy education, but it usually doesn't involve this kind of stuff because they're not trying to teach people how to be business owners. They're trying to teach people how to be worker bees.
Right. And if you are a performer of any kind, you're not a worker bee, you're a business owner. So please bear that in mind. But if you are me, if you are like me and this kind of stuff overwhelms you, and I know that Eric just gave you a masterclass in all of this in the last hour, please understand that the overwhelm is real and I get it. Bite off small chunks. If you don't get it done all this year, or even all next year, do what you can, hire someone, use the software, start small. And if you get, like I do, I get overwhelmed with this stuff. And it took me about 5 days not working all the time. I would take frequent breaks and play guitar. I'd go for walks just because it is overwhelming for me. Now you might be like, oh, he told me what to do. I know how to do it. I'm going to contact my CPA, blah, blah, blah. I'm ready to go. But if it is overwhelming, you're allowed to step back and you're allowed to go, okay, what can I do right now? So much of this is mindset and so much of this is remembering the IRS is not interested in throwing any of us in jail. They want their money, but that's just the baseline. The other parts of it are that you can do this if you take your time, take your steps slowly, and maybe not for this year, because this is obviously already we're in April, but at least for the next year, like Eric said, go back to January, figure out what you can do from January to today, and then start establishing these systems so that it's easier for you to do taxes come next year. And I'm going to tell a quick story before we wrap up, and before I thank Eric for all of this incredible information. Rich and I, my husband and I, were at a restaurant, and there were these two young women. And if you happen to be listening to this, because they said they were going to start listening to the podcast, if you happen to be listening to this, hi, we met you at Le Botaniste. Here's the thing. Rich and I were sitting, we're eating our dinner. These two young women were sitting eating their dinner next to us. And I'm a chatty Cathy, so I'm a shameless eavesdropper. So I was listening sort of with one ear to what they were saying. And one of them said to the other, well, I have a job. And I have, you know, that's a W-2 job, but I also have a side hustle. But I think because I already have a job that I don't need to like do anything with the other part of it. And her friend went, yeah, I don't think you need to do anything. And she's like, yeah, I mean, I think they were going to give me a 1099, but I don't know if I need to do anything with it. So I think because I have a job that gives me a W-2, I'm fine. And I went, okay, I have to step in here. You have to pay taxes on this. You have to have your 1099. You have to da, da, da. I said, you know, I'm not an accountant. Check with your accountant. But absolutely, if you are earning money from a side hustle, this is an important aspect of your taxes now. And they both went, oh, wow. Okay, this I didn't know. Thank you. And so a lot of us don't know this stuff. And this is why I'm saying, this is why what
And that's
Eric
why
is
we're here today.
Exactly. That's why what Eric has been talking about is so important. It's things like this that we need to know, especially if we're business owners, if you're a freelancer, if you are doing a side hustle of any sort, this is all stuff that you need to know and or check with your accountant. Eric, any closing thoughts before we...
Yeah. Again, this can be very overwhelming, and it's fine. And the good news about these podcasts is that these episodes, you can go back and re-listen to it. You don't have to remember any of this. You can just go back and listen. Let me give you three things you can do right now. First thing you can do, start collecting receipts for anything you pay for cash. Use your business account to pay for business expenses. That'll help you keep track of it. And you won't have to fumble with a lot of paper receipts, but anything for cash, keep receipts and save them in an envelope and then look at them once a week and, you know, enter them into a document or enter them into your software. If you don't have any accounting software, get started with that. And the other thing I would say is get an app that keeps track of your mileage, get hooked up with MileIQ or one of these others. Get it all set up so that when you're in your car, before you start a trip, and if it doesn't automatically ask you and pop up when you start a trip, then have a little something on your dashboard that says, you know, open MileIQ or open your app so you can log this stuff. So you're at least starting to keep track of things now. That's what you can do right away. Don't worry about the math. Don't worry about the tax deductions right now. Just start keeping records. Keeping track of all this stuff and just document everything, because that will help you down the road to be more organized. That would be the things that I would recommend is pay your business expenses out of your business account, keep track of your cash receipts, and start keeping track of your mileage.
There you go. Ta-da, you can start there. And don't be afraid of this. Take small steps, but you can do it. I promise you, if I can do it, anybody can do it. And that is just the fact. I mean, it's true. You have no idea the kinds of anxiety attacks I used to get in my early 30s when I first went sort of freelance. And I was just, it was just because I had bad records. I had all of my receipts in manila folders, you know, and I was just not. And every year, March brought hives. It just did. It wasn't allergies. It was hives from having to do taxes. So, but now I have a system and I love my system and I use my system. And you just
and
have
that's
to remember
the beauty of it.
Yeah.
Once you get started, it becomes muscle memory and you just kind of go in there and it's just one of the things on your list that you do. It's like for me, for groceries, I am the worst guy. I go into a grocery store and I just go insane and I buy way too much. So I have to have a list.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do is I use the reminder app in my iPhone and I have a reminder. I have a category called grocery list. And so I'll go to Siri and I'll say something like, "Hey Siri, add capers to my grocery list."
And
And then, sorry, it
I
actually
love
did
that
that.
Siri added capers to your
Okay. And then, and so now when I go to the store, I have already have the list in my phone and on my Apple Watch, and I can just go down the list and just check off everything as I get it. So every time we run out of things or we're about to run out of something, I've got my son Ian trained to let me know, "Hey, Eric, we're out of, cheese, or we're almost out of this. Okay, put it on the list." So I'll just add it on the list right away. And that way I go to the grocery store, I got my list, and I can just say to myself, "Stay on the list. Do not buy the half price Easter candy. Stay on the list. No, stop. Don't buy the half price Easter candy."
No
So,
peeps, no peeps.
yeah, that's right. No diabetic comas. But it's just like that. It's just a simple little discipline. Okay. I have days of the week where I do certain things just because that seems to be the way it works out with my schedule. It's all the same. So you're already, what I guess what I'm trying to say is you are already in the habit. You already have systems for other things. This is just one other thing you need a system for. That's all. You already have systems for other things in your life that you're trying to deal with and that you need to do on a regular basis. This is just another system. And once you get it in place, it's great. I'm looking forward one of these days to having a shortcut on my iPhone. It's like, "Hey Siri, do my taxes." And it's, "No, stop Siri." And
Be careful what you say there,
yeah,
Eric.
do my taxes. And it's going to be like, yes,
Yikes.
the federal marshal's on his way to handcuff you. No.
Yeah, and again, like for me, I use Asana and I have a little task that's every week that just says reconcile. And it's due every week at 8:30. I get a little prompt, hey, you have to reconcile your expenses. And
It's
I go and
it's
I
exactly like it's like doing laundry or doing the groceries or
brushing your
anything
teeth.
like that. Got to change the sheets on the bed, wash your sheets. It's just like it's that mundane. And we have the systems now and the technology now to make that much less painful than it used to be. And so I would say please take full advantage of that. It really is easier than it's ever been. It's not great, but it's as right now it's as good as it's ever it's better than it's ever been. So use those resources. Locate professionals in your area that can help you. There are also a lot of organizations, and your local government or state government may have classes that you can take for free on tax preparation.
And
Or,
I
they
have,
may have cl
oh,
classes
go
for
ahead.
small business owners on how to do your taxes. The local chamber of commerce may have speakers or classes on that. There are a lot of free resources that can help you with this sort of thing.
Yep, absolutely. And here in New York, I know that I have friends who are CFAs and CFPs and CPAs, which are certified financial analysts, certified financial planners. And CPA folks, certified public accountants, who do pro bono taxes. They actually give like 2 hours or 3 hours every week, and they are there for people who don't know how to do them or who have questions or whatever at different parts, at different libraries, things like that.
Especially if you're just getting started and your revenues are and your income is low, or if you're a senior citizen, you can it's great to take advantage of these. And you'd be surprised as old how many seniors are starting businesses.
Oh, not at all. I wouldn't be surprised even a little. And in fact, just so you know, next week's episode is all about career change in midlife. That's something that I'm looking at right now, is if you're
Oh, wait a
retiring
minute. You didn't
and
put it on my schedule here. I'm the guy, man. I went from being an investment advisor to doing magic full time at the age of 46. So.
Yeah, and it's I mean that's that it's an important thing. A lot of people, especially after COVID, are going, what is it I really want to do? So this kind of career change and going into a more entrepreneurial frame of mind is happening all around us. And if you're one of those people, this episode's going to be really much for you. So listen on April 15th. This has been amazing, Eric. You are incredible for giving all of this fantastic
Look, I'm happy to
information.
help. I know how much this stresses people out. I know how challenging it is. And it doesn't matter if you're struggling or if you're wealthy, there's all this anxiety around money and particularly taxes. So again, I'm happy to be able to help. I hope we pointed you to some resources that will help you. There's a lot of things you can get on Google searches, but again, there are all kinds of free resources in your community that can help you get this stuff all set up. You can probably even find taxes on, I mean, taxes, classes on things like QuickBooks and TurboTax that will help you get set up. So, please take advantage of those. That's why they're there.
And remember, there are organizations like Lawyers for the Arts and Accountants for the Arts that are out there. You can find them too, for if you are an artist of some sort, that there are resources like that that are available to you either for free or very much a reduced cost. So be aware of that. Eric, I would love it if you would just give a quick rundown of where someone who wants to know more about you, the work you're doing as a magician, and also the work you're doing with the Money Arts Academy. Where can someone find you?
Okay, so I'm easy to find. I'm on the web at erichenningmagic.com. Our next Washington Magic shows are going to be April 25th, day after my birthday, and May 4th. April 25th, our show is Classics of Magic. May 4th, it's going to be Magic Around the World. And then we have a special show on June 22nd, which is a fundraiser for the Arts Club of Washington, which is still trying to rebuild its kitchen after the terrible fire they had. And they're really trying to get them funded so they can build, basically, and I know this is a boring phrase, but they're going to try to build it back and make it better. They're going to try to build it, make it really, really good. And that takes quite a bit of money, especially when you're dealing with an historic building that was built in 1802.
Wow.
So and used to house a president. So yeah, it's a big deal. So we're going to be doing a fundraiser on June 22nd. Then they're going to close down for 2 months and reopen with a brand new kitchen in September. We're very excited about that.
That's awesome.
I am available for adult, corporate, social, and charity events in the Metro DC area for the right money. I can travel. Again, erichenningmagic.com. You can see what some very nice people have had to say about me and what I do. If you're a performing artist in particular or any kind of art professional, I've worked with photographers and magicians and all sorts of different people. Then I would be happy to talk to you. If you basically, I'm working on some books, but I'm also working on a YouTube channel that's not up, not going yet. But what I'm going to try to do is give advice in snippets, in easy to digest, bite-sized pieces. For free on YouTube, so people understand, hey, this guy knows what he's doing, and to help people. But and I do have a few coaching slots available for people who want personal coaching. If you go to moneyartsacademy.com and you set up an appointment and use the code Izolda, Izolda, your free 30-minute consultation instantly becomes a free 60-minute consultation.
Awesome.
So we can figure out where you are and what you need. And if you don't, and if I can't help you, I'll try to point you to somebody who can, because this is really, it's a business, but it's also a labor of love, because I'm trying to get this need out there in the community taken care of. So that's where we are. So erichenningmagic.com, and I'm sure the links will be in the show notes, and moneyartsacademy.com. And I will see you, I guess, Isolde, I'll see you in a month, unless you're
Yep.
coming down to DC, and please let me know.
No, I'm not going to be in DC for a little while. I'm going to be in upstate New York next week for the, or right now for the eclipse. It's, if you're listening to this on Monday the 8th, I am outside somewhere, probably in the snow, trying to eclipse hunt. If it's the 8th of April, I have things coming up here in New York City, but nothing that is going to be letting me travel until June, but I will be letting you all know about that really
How can
fun
they
thing
find out where
later.
to see you, where you're going to be appearing?
Oh, nowhere public for a little while. Nowhere
Oh, not
public.
so, it's
I
private events for the moment.
private events for the next 2 months. Yes, unfortunately, nothing public for a little while.
Okay.
The coaching is great and I love it, and the workshops that I'm doing on communication and creative leadership are fabulous, and I'm having a great time with them. But
Oh,
those tend to be sort of for private events. So
sure.
if you are working for a company that needs to improve the way people communicate so that they can work together better and with more harmony, you let me know. I would love to come in and help you make that a reality. Until next time, this is Isolde Trachtenberg reminding you on behalf of Eric Henning and myself that this show is here for your entertainment and also for your education, but always consult your professionals. And you're going to hear the little, I can't think of the word right now, disclaimer at the end. But I do want to remind you that this is about us as business owners being responsible for ourselves and taking the reins of our life and our work in our own hands so that we can actualize and do the work that we're meant to be doing and the work that's closest to our hearts. Until next time, Eric, thank you so much for being here for Money Monday. And I am Isolde Trachtenberg for the Creative Solutions Podcast, as always reminding you to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. While Eric Henning teaches general principles of money and does individual business coaching, he cannot and does not provide investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult a professional licensed in your place of residence for specific tax, legal, or investment advice. Thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the show if you're new, and it would mean the world to me if you told a friend about it. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2024. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope.